Take a vacation from your bills, pay off credit cards, and save thousands of dollars after a simple phone call to Golden Oak Lending. Visit goldenoaklending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, buddy, it's hour number two of the G-Back Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. What a big Cowboys news day here. So much going on. Talking about America's team here. Couple of weeks to go until the draft, but we are now comfortably inside the month of April, and Wolchuk has your NFL news of the day. Here he is.
I'm so sorry, Brian. We got bad news. The method for measuring first downs in the NFL is going to switch from the chain gangs to camera-based technology for this coming year.
That's a shame.
Now, the traditional chain crew will remain on the sidelines.
There you go.
In a secondary capacity.
So it's just not in case there's a mess up?
Yeah, it's not like we're saying, like, guys, sorry, you can't be on the field anymore. You no longer have a job. They just really won't have a job.
They won't.
Not really going to rely on you for
they're
anything.
They're props now.
Yeah, you're props.
They're part of the look.
Just there for the aesthetic.
Till we decide they're in the way.
Yeah, and just in case something breaks down, then we've got you there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, really, you don't have a job. You're just kind of doing the bit.
There's going to be coaches wanting to see down the line of scrimmage. They're going to look at those guys, and now they're not necessary. They're gone. Bye-bye.
Get out of here.
So you think eventually this will just move away from those guys not even having a presence on the sideline?
Yeah.
Over time. Once they prove that the technology is not going to crap out on them, they're in fear of like having the backup necessary, or maybe they'll find another backup to where they don't have to have them. Eventually, they'll get phased out.
That will be kind of a sad day.
Yeah. Because I like seeing it. There's something about
nothing better than those dudes getting run over on the sideline.
Exactly. There's usually one or two a year that are pretty
blood
funny.
Blood and knee.
Yeah, pretty comical.
One guy broke his leg.
Yeah, it was Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, that's right.
But remember, Alvin Kamara gave him a signed jersey after that.
He sent him some cool stuff.
All is good.
He did.
I think they're the rare game officials I don't absolutely despise, though. And I think it's because they're not making any bad judgment calls. You know what they do with science? I'm going to give you 10 yards.
Yeah,
next week, Sunday, 12 noon, I'm going to give you 10 yards again.
Do it.
What are you looking for?
NFL owners have tabled the proposal to ban the tush push. They want to talk about the language of this thing.
They're tabling the tush?
They're tabling the tush. So they might just end up changing the language. You can't be like pushing people, which would then end up inevitably changing the way that they have to do the play.
Because it's not a tush problem necessarily. It's just 100% it's a push problem.
It's a push issue. The tushes are fair play. We also have the dynamic kickoffs here to stay, but there's one notable adjustment. NFL owners voted today that they will move the ball to the 35-yard line on touchbacks, which, if you don't know what the touchback is, it is kicks sent into the end zone. So they did see 332 more kickoff returns, which was a 21.8% bump. Or 32.8% bump from previously. But now, I mean, this is great news for the Cowboys, because if somebody does say, hey, we don't want to kick it to Kevontae Turpin, you're a first down away from being in field goal range with Butter Aubrey on your team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's...
You probably should kick it to Turpin. Take your chances.
It definitely benefits the Cowboys from the Turpin standpoint. I don't like the idea of... because you get these coaches like McCarthy that just love a field goal. So all of a sudden they're like getting conservative now on third and five at midfield, because they're like, hey, we can just settle for three. We don't have to risk this thing.
Well,
they're just settling for 60-yard field goals.
How bad the Cowboys' red zone offense has been anyway. They're probably going to be settling for three.
Just kick that field goal on first
down. Just save the time.
Yeah.
You know, just
get 10 field goals.
Screw it. Just move forward. All right. Speaking of the Cowboys, this has been a content-rich environment. We'll talk more C-Note coming up. Shoddy was talking about draft stuff, the Micah deal, wide receiver two. But Brandon Laurie's done an excellent job, part of Blogging the Boys, putting out clips of Todd France's interview, who is Dak Prescott's agent, with Athletes First. And we got a couple of cuts from this. Here's Todd France talking about, you know, Dak, and if the deal didn't get done, if he was willing to actually leave the Cowboys and test free agency.
he gave us the green. He just, you do what you need to do. Like, I'm focused on football.
Yeah.
Especially when they started very late coming back at us. They could have done it all off season.
Yep.
And when Dak's getting ready for camp and getting into camp, the switch flips. Like, he does not want to be involved in or having conversations about the contract.
Yep.
Now, we can talk about it, and he didn't even want to be updated unless there was something worthy to be talked about. Yep. Now, I still did, and he still heard it, but they were shorter conversations. They weren't near as in-depth as they were the first go-around because he was in training camp,
yep.
And that's where he wanted to be, and that's where his mindset was. And he was willing to bet on himself. He's like, that's fine. They don't want to do a contract. I'll be a free agent.
Yep.
You know, and of course, the Cowboys, you know, were banking on the star on the helmet, and that they, no matter what, he's going to come back. And it wasn't going to go. It wasn't going to work out that way. I had a deal not worked out. I really believe it.
Man, big missed opportunity. I'm so surprised the Cowboys would get leveraged so hard into more than Josh Allen got by such a significant amount. They really got beat up on this contract. This might be why Jerry's so strong against Micah. Because they finally realized how bad they were getting humiliated these negotiations.
Oh, it's about to get worse for him with Mike and David Mulligetta. He's not going to come out the winner of this one. Mike is going to get every single dollar and penny that he wants. But again, Todd Francis saying they were late to the offer on this. I mean, yeah. That's the theme. They're late. They don't have a sense of urgency. Their time is their time. Whenever they feel like, okay, now we've got to get a deal done, they'll get the deal done.
Yeah.
Here's Todd France also talking about the specifics of Dak's deal.
Ultimately, you know, made a significant offer of guaranteed money, but you just can't look at the guaranteed money in a vacuum. You have to look at all of the pieces. And obviously the media is getting bits and pieces and making it out like Dak's crazy and he's being offered $100 million guaranteed and he's this and he's that. And, you know, and ultimately, you know, I had to sit down with Dak and educate him on why it doesn't make sense to do that deal and then have all of our contingencies in place. Because if you're telling a guy to turn down $100 million,
yep.
A lot can happen, either bad play, injuries, whatever. So we went through a brainstorm of every scenario that could possibly happen. And if it happened, what was our plan?
Yep.
And so he knew, including a significant injury.
Yep.
And how that would impact another negotiation. And he was comfortable with all that, from the insurance plan and understanding that that's not the end all be all, to a permanent injury if you can ever play football, like what your future looks like. And obviously, as a later round draft pick, yeah. Teams have a tendency to dangle money in front of a player and that they'll just grab it because it's, you know, the more than they've ever seen.
Yep.
And that is a strategy by a team. And I get that. And some kids might go for that. Luckily for me, Dak put all his 100% trust and faith in what I was guiding him and telling him. We went through every scenario. It was very detailed. And we ultimately turned down that money. Yeah. And I remember the day I called Steven and told him we weren't going to do it. And I remember exactly what his response was. Exactly. Yeah. What his response was.
To be a fly on the wall and hear that response. I wonder what that response was. I don't think it was very good. And I bet it was probably some four-letter words.
Yeah, it would have to be very frustrating,
yeah.
You know, especially because you know you're just going to cave. And that's, I think, a big problem. Salute to Dak and his team for having great savvy and, you know, and the cojones to go for the better deal. But if they had been paying attention, they knew that even if we get hurt, chances are the Cowboys will still sign us to a big deal. And that happened with Terrence Steele. It happened with Michael Gallup. It happened with Dak. And... You know, I think that is the missed opportunity for me, is letting players not play at, you know, up to their potential or at the highest level for their position in the entire sport and then still, you know, give them market setting type deals. You know, if we're going that they are actually trying to negotiate and not just engagement farming and dragging this out to do media, if we're going that this is their best attempt, it really looks like they just say early, you have to do a team-friendly deal if you want to get a deal done with us. If not, you got to wait. And then once they get to the end, they say, okay, you won, you waited. So now you get to dictate the terms of the deal. And I think it's because they don't want to really put in the day-to-day work that it would take to hammer one of these things out. Sometimes it takes hours and hours and hours. The Joneses don't have time for that. They got a billionaire lifestyle to tend to. Okay. And that's what I think that's one of the main problems with them being so involved in the day-to-day operations of the football team.
Yeah. I mean, because they are phenomenal business people and they've got a lot of other businesses that I believe are probably thriving and they probably are great when it comes to negotiating some of those business deals. Yeah. But unless you get an agent that maybe is not the same caliber of a Todd France or a David Mulligetta or a Dave Cantor, some of these other agents that have clearly bullied them instead of the other way around in negotiations. And it's easy to say, like, hey, we're talking to Micah. These players are smart, like Dak. You hire an agent for a reason, and you're hiring the shark of all agents in David Mulligetta because you want to maximize every bit of money you're getting. So if you're Micah, Jerry can offer you whatever the hell you want in person, but I'm not signing a damn thing until my agent is sitting there telling me and guiding me in what to do. So Dak could hear $100 million guaranteed. Hell yeah, thank you. I'm here for that. I was a fourth round pick. That's life changing. And then Todd France sits Dak down, like he said there, and explains to him exactly why that's not the right thing to do. So maybe in the past it worked for the Cowboys to get it, have the one-on-one conversations with a Dez, a Romo, a Tyron Smith, whatever it was. But today, these players are smarter than that. Unless they're representing themselves, you're not going to accomplish anything without having the agent in the room.
I was thinking if I was Micah, you know what I'd do is I would go ahead and fire my agent. Me and Jerry have been talking a lot about this and just taking 40 and a half, you know. I got a pretty good understanding right now of what I can get. It's not going to be, you know, so much more by keeping Mulligetta that I need him.
Just take out the middleman here.
Yeah.
And if you're Jerry, that's the sell.
Yeah. I want like 120 guaranteed.
You don't need to be giving up any percentage of your earnings.
Yeah, I think the financial stuff sort of is what it is for the most part, but it's all the other things like Dak's agent was just explaining. Like, yeah, the 100 million guaranteed is awesome, but all these other details of the contract that are going to create leverage for you even on the next deal. Trade clauses.
Like he was three steps ahead in this thing. So like he's already putting in stipulations for Dak's next deal, which he just ended up signing.
I think ChatGPT could answer all this for me, like what I want.
Ooh, maybe. You know? Maybe it could.
I mean, it's a lot of money, right?
It is a lot
what
of money.
What is it for? It's above 5%. 5% is like, so he's
for
looking
agents?
At, yeah.
3%. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, $6 million. I could save myself here.
Could. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of cheddar. The NFL has voted to change the overtime rules during the regular season. It's now going to align with the playoffs, but because they don't want to go a full 15 minutes, right? Player safety here. We got to shave that overtime minutes. Down to 10 minutes. Yeah, we're going to take out 5 minutes. Because the 5 minutes, people can get hurt, all right? They can injure themselves.
Yeah.
So we're going to go 10 minutes here in overtime. Now, I did hear Bobby ask this question. It was a rare, phenomenal question from Bob.
Wow, shots fired.
What happens, though, if you get a team, and the likelihood of this happening, not high, but let's say they just go on a 10-minute drive and kill that whole thing. Does the other team still get the opportunity to possess the ball? Is it a full-on untimed drive?
No, they don't.
I wouldn't think so.
It's no, didn't over. Dallas do that to Philadelphia?
Just over?
Didn't the Amari Cooper overtime winner against Philadelphia?
Well, that was one of the rules where you score, you win. You get a touchdown, you win the game.
I thought that was like a 10-minute drive.
No, they scored the touchdown to win.
Right, but I'm saying they never gave him. I mean, yeah, but the drive was impressive. That was an impressive drive,
but there still was time on the clock. So in this scenario, Philly would have had the opportunity to get the ball back. If there actually was 0 seconds on the clock, I don't know what they would do. I guess you're right. You know, you just move
Seems
on.
Seems fair. Yeah. You have an opportunity. Play defense.
You lost.
Don't let the other team hold it for
10
minutes.
Don't let them do that. You stink. The NFL has also voted to expand instant replay assistance. So under this expanded purview, a flag can now be picked up for defenseless player, face mask, horse collar, tripping and roughing / running into the kicker penalties, so long as there's clear and obvious video evidence to showcase that the flag was improperly thrown. So that could be big. I mean, that could be a game altering type of call that was made, and now you can go back. Video evidence shows you, nah, this guy wasn't illegally downfield. No, he didn't rough the kicker. This should just be running into. Could be huge.
Feels like something they should just do in the final 2 minutes of the half in the game, because I wonder how much that could slow particular games down.
I'm sure if it does, they'll go ahead and mess with this again. Because right now, they've got it pretty much dialed where we got three-hour games, and then you're moving on. Last thing here, the NFL, we know they owned Christmas Day last year. They did the Thursday double feature. It's now going to be a triple header on Christmas Day as Netflix will be heading this one again. They'll have game one in game two, but the NFL is kicking Amazon a third game. So we get the Christmas Day triple header this year after the success of two games last year. So much sports. You get the NBA on Christmas Day, and you're going to get the triple header for the NFL. So we'll see if the Cowboys play in that. There is momentum building. The Cowboys will be playing the Jets in London. So we'll wait for the schedule to get that finalized. But there was some buzz coming out of the meetings. They could be end up being one of these UK games this year. Jets would be the home team. Cowboys.
Hello. You ready?
Let's do this.
I went in 2014. It was fun.
Road trip.
That'd be like a 5:30 a.m. pregame.
Yeah. All righty. We got to run. G-Bag Nation, there's Wolchuk's NFL news of the day. What Jerry Jones says Micah Parsons has to do if he wants that big old bag of money. The C-Note, Cowboys news of the evening is next on the Fan. Fascinating story out of the NFL Brian sent to me today shortly before the show started. The league is expected to opt out of their television deals with Fox, CBS, Amazon, and ESPN 4 years early. Okay, this thing not due and to expire till 2033, but they're going to pull the plug on this thing 2029. And the reason is the data that they keep getting in on revenue and revenue projections is the current deal is significantly undervalued. So as much money as the NFL is making, it's way low. So they're going to bail on this bad boy in 2029 and start renegotiating it. It is a ways out. But if you remember last time, it was quite interesting as the side effects were a bidding war for talent, and the play-by-play and the analyst money went from a couple mil to all of a sudden $20, $25 million for some of these big hitter play-by-play guys. Tony Romo, $20 million a year. Tom Brady, more. As a result of those networks trying to be the belle of the ball and look the prettiest to get the best games and all that. And I wouldn't be surprised if a similar thing happened this time around. Big money in that sports TV. It's incredible. Like the games that they're putting on now, like third and fourth division live soccer games. You know, it's a golden era if you want to watch Division III college basketball. It's just everywhere on your apps because it's more valuable than anything else. All the TV shows, the movies, we're all getting that on demand.
Exactly. Yeah, we're only watching sports in real time.
Yep. Nick Harris tweet here. He says, I asked Jerry if a reason why he could be waiting to get Micah's deal done is to see if he shows up to OTAs and steps into the leadership role. That's an interesting angle.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry's answer, Micah has to be the player that he wants paid as. He has to be a tremendous leader for the Dallas Cowboys. Can Micah be a tremendous leader? What's Jerry all saying here?
I think a big thing will be, are you there and at the facility for OTAs and minicamps this year?
And I think that's really the extent of it. It's just being there.
Yeah. And you know what? Even being there at times, even if you're not the natural leader, which it doesn't really appear that Micah is, just from the outside looking in and then from just, you know, whispers and things that we get told. He doesn't necessarily have all those traits that you're kind of born with, right? You can't just say, like, I'm a leader, I want to be. You kind of just, yeah, or you're not. But being there, I think, is half the battle.
It is. Be there with enthusiasm. Yeah. That's leadership. You know, you can't be the rah-rah guy. You can't be the leader of the speaking and all that all the time. Everybody's not talented for that kind of deal. Sorry, Brian.
No, no problem. I think it's going to be very hard for him to be there all the time. I think he has.
Yeah, me too.
I think he's one of these guys that has so many other interests, you know, and outside. I've said this a bunch. I think he hates classroom football. I don't think he wants to be a part of that.
He likes to sumo wrestle in Japan from time to time.
He likes to podcast. He likes to go around and see professional sporting events. He likes to travel. You know, his time is his time. And I think it's going to be very, very difficult for him. He will be around when he absolutely has to be around. And if you want to say, okay, is he going to be a leader once they get off the plane in Oxnard and it ends whenever it ends? I think that's fair game. But I don't think when the springtime, that is Micah Parsons' time to go do what Micah Parsons wants to do.
Have you guys ever looked at the sumo guys? They just they look to be able to stand tall and hold so much power. Like they'd be a good guard, wouldn't they?
Sumo guys? The leverage that they play with, because their ability, their ability to play with their knees bent. And then to kind of pick up and drive.
Natural knee benders.
Yeah. Maybe some good one techs. Yeah. I know Shoddy said,
there you go.
Micah said that he wants to be around. It's where he wants to be. I think we're very comfortable with that. I have no question in my mind that he will be around. So it sounds like maybe a little bit of a challenge from the organization here.
I don't know how much it matters if he's there. You know, if he wants to be a leader, the only chance is to be there. You know, I just think he's an amazing football player. He's not a leader, so whatever he does on Sundays, I'm thrilled with. But I find it interesting that Jerry said that. You know, does that have a bearing on the negotiation? Do they look at it like, you know, if you want to get paid like this and you're not a leader, maybe you're not one of our guys? You know, are the Cowboys just like punching the clock on this negotiation and getting to a final end point at some deadline in the future? Or are they actually considering all options behind the scenes and thinking, you know, we need concessions for Micah and his team, or maybe we try to do something else?
Yeah, because it would be very easy for him to comply for one off season to earn the contract. And then once it's signed, who knows what his off seasons will look like over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, unless you can contractually obligate him, and I don't even know if you're allowed to do that, obligate a player to voluntary workouts. Can you make them involuntary?
You can negotiate it in a way to where you can say he could get bonuses for working out, but when you're making $40 million a year,
you might not care.
You might get that $250,000 bonus, so what?
Yeah.
You know, that's how some of these players...
I want to be in Fiji.
Yeah, some of these players need the workout bonus money. People that make $40 million a year don't need that money.
Okay, some Coach Shoddy audio. He was talking about what they're looking for at 12. Here we go.
Starting point would be best player available. You know, you're always looking for game changers when you're picking 12. Like, we don't want to ever pick 12th again, right? Let's be honest. We don't want to pick that high. But you're looking for guys that influence the game. How do you influence the game? You rush the quarterback and you get sacks, strip sacks, fumbles, whatever it is. You score touchdowns, okay? So those are usually, I look at it this way, you build it from the outside in. So you got corners, receivers, they get isolated one-on-one. Pass rushers, tackles, they get isolated one-on-one, and then obviously the quarterback position. But usually that's the way I've looked at it, is when you're building a roster, kind of think of it from building it from outside in based on guys that get isolated a lot, because when you're isolated and you can't help, it's pretty daunting task sometimes.
Yeah, pretty general positional value type stuff. You know, your four main important positions, you'd like your best player available to be one of those. But I think the most applicable thing to me is you need best available player, because you need good ones around here.
That outside in was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was grew up, I guess, thinking inside out. What are those outside receivers good for if I don't have the ability to block for them to allow my quarterback time? Now,
Shedeur Sanders lives that when he has to deal with Travis Hunter, is one of the best players in college football,
and, as a receiver,
they can't block for him.
Yeah, you can be neutralized because now, I mean, we've seen it with Pat Mahomes in the two Super Bowls that he lost. So I guess maybe for Shoddy, he saw Seattle built that way in a sense. Did they do that a little bit outside in? Like, they were really good at corner.
John was always taking running backs and always taking offensive linemen. And
like, did we think of their line as being that? I mean, they did have some good D linemen, but they were their secondary. So like, I get some of what he's saying there, but it's also a different type of approach.
It is different because of the way his father was.
Yeah.
His father was about the physicality, and you would figure that would be inside out. So, yeah, a little bit different there.
It did make me think corner, receiver, edge.
He might be throwing you off a little bit there.
You never know. You never know.
Well, I mean, that is the premium positions that are getting paid. The guys that hit the quarterbacks, the guys that catch touchdowns, the guys that are defending the wide receivers. And I think the Cowboys have built like that for a long time, you know, targeting those. The thing is, the trick is, how do you also get a good center, two guards, a running back, and stand-up linebackers while making your premium positions as great as possible?
You know? You can't neglect, like they have in the past, where you just don't have you don't have linebackers,
yeah,
or they're just punting on the position altogether in that final year with Dan Quinn. So there are elements to that as well. But I did think it is one of the first times I've heard that where you're talking about from the outside in. I get what he's saying, the players on an island that can't necessarily be helped as much with scheme, but you can help wide receivers get open. It doesn't always have to be you have to just beat the guy in front of you.
Especially with his tight bunches and what he wants to talk about, like just tighter formations. You're not leaving them as susceptible as you would outside.
But then when he talked about winning the division, he talked about how important it was to be beasts in the front seven on both sides of the ball. So he's kind of just saying everything.
Could just be throwing people off sense.
I love the idea of the tight formation, though, and wide receivers that can block. This is a good talking point. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of potential in that. Here he is talking about wide receivers and something they're looking for still as they're out there looking for a wide receiver, too. I believe he reflects on Tolbert. Here we go.
Yeah. Again, CD's an incredible player. Always looking to add depth at that room. Again, really proud of Jalen Tolbert. I've talked about him from the time we started talking about it 2 years ago when he was improving to now we talk about him as the leading receiver touchdown-wise on our team. Along with finding guys and adding more pieces, it's our job as a staff to be a developmental staff, right? We need to get these guys like Ryan Flournoy, Mingo, to take the next step. We have to do that. That's our job. And so one of the things that we're working on right now is an improvement plan for each guy, okay? And, all right, so let's use Mingo, for example. These are the two or three things that, okay, hey, for Mingo to get to where we want him to go, he does these three things. It's not just those three things. It's what are the steps, the action plan to do those three things. And so that's what we're looking at now with our current players because, as you know, they come back here in 2 weeks. And so between developing those guys on the roster and always looking under every corner to add some speed and some more playmaking skills, we're always looking to do that.
Love to hear that. You got to have a backup plan to add, though. I know he wants to protect his guys and give Flournoy and Mingo a shot and Tolbert and Brooks and whoever else. But from a front office perspective, we got to get him some better players. That's what that comes down to right there. And I'd be excited if they do it at 12. Got a lot of draft coverage here coming up all month long as we build towards this draft. We'll have the best draft coverage in the world led by Brian Broaddus.
Thank you, man.
Wolchuk, a big part of it. Okay, and Krusty's Corner's coming up next, man. Where are you taking it?
Yeah, speaking of positions in the draft, this is one we haven't talked a lot about. I'm going to walk Zach through some stuff and see what he thinks. We'll do that next.
Oh, thank you very much, Ross. In for Lucius this week. It's the G-Back Nation here on The Fan. You know, Jerry Jones was effusive in his praise for DeMarcus Lawrence and the leadership he gave the Cowboys. Said the comments that he made shortly after joining Seattle have zero influence on his desire to put DeMarcus in the Cowboys Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor?
Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't saying he's going in the Ring of Honor. He's just saying that would have no bearing on it.
Wow.
Like what Tank said about the Cowboys never winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it would have no bearing. I don't know. It seems like Jerry's very pro Tank, though. Talking about his leadership and Tank and Micah is, you know, a legitimate dispute. They're publicly backing the guy that left. I find that interesting. Maybe Jerry had his champion in that dispute. I don't know. You tell me, Brian. Here's Brian with Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Brian.
Thank you very much, General. Thank you to Reliant for being a part of this as well. Can I ask you guys a real quick question about Coach mentioned Mingo off the jump at wide receiver.
Fail.
Do you feel like that their thought of Mingo and coaching him up, and I know you just said what you said, but do you feel like that they feel differently or a lot differently about him than, of course, how we do? And what they feel about him might affect how they draft wide receiver.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about who do you pair with CeeDee Lamb? You know, you think, oh, well, put somebody big on the other side that I was looking at something the other day, matter of fact, with Hunter. You talk about a guy who can catch slants and stuff like that, but I was just kind of looking at numbers and metrics. But you're thinking about a big bodied receiver opposite of CeeDee. Do you think that makes them, I mean, that we're not looking at Mingo enough? They feel like that, well, hey, well, we've got a guy. We've got a guy that kind of like what they thought about before they took Dak when, you know, they had Jameel Showers at quarterback and they felt like they already had their Dak.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the offseason, there was a part of me that felt like, yes, they would just use the Mingo trade, which is still fresh. This isn't something that is now a couple years into it. This is still very, very fresh. They felt like just a few months ago he was worth giving up a fourth-round pick for. So in my mind, I was thinking they might just use that as an excuse to sort of avoid the position and let's see what we have in this guy. But then the more the offseason has gone on, the more louder it's gotten about the need for wide receiver two opposite CeeDee Lamb. And so I've kind of moved off that, but it wouldn't be shocking to me for them to just be like, hey, we traded for Mingo. Let's see what we got with this guy.
Yes. I don't think it would shock me either, Chief, and it would be pathetic and dysfunctional. But you know, I the only thing you could see in Mingo is we're going tight formation. Well, he can block.
We're going to play reduced. Yeah.
And there's going to be situations where the other team thinks he's just a blocker and he's going to be so wide open. And then we'll throw him the ball and he'll still only catch half of the targets. Like this guy's completion percentage, you know, based on his per target is just horrible. It's a fail. You know, I think the fact you gave up a fourth round pick for it is embarrassing. Back to you, Brian.
Well, so Steven yesterday said we're still open to looking at a really explosive number two that could upgrade us. He did clarify, like our room and certainly the players we currently have, but he did mention that we're looking to upgrade possibly wide receiver two, which makes me a little bit hopeful that that's still definitely a target at 12, possibly, if one's there. But the explosive, that might open up all statures of player.
Yeah,
might not be the body type that we're thinking.
Right, because that's the thing about CeeDee Lamb. He's not overly big, but he's also not overly fast. So when you're looking to compliment him, you could go either direction on that.
Could go Matthew Golden.
You can go
6 foot.
Just speedster guy. Because that's not necessarily CeeDee Lamb, or you could go the Tet McMillan route, which is bigger body guy who can also push the ball down the field,
right.
But he's not the fastest guy on the field. So I think you could look at it either way, just a flavors kind of deal.
Yeah, I'm interested because, like I said, how do you guys feel about Tolbert then? Is that, even though that
I don't feel good about any one of these guys not named CeeDee Lamb being wide receiver number two. Everybody else is just a three at best.
Yeah.
Tolbert's a guy that I don't mind having as probably my fourth best wide receiver right now. A guy that can do a few things out there, but we need a number two and a number three.
All right. I was thinking the same thing. I you know, they keep talking about Tolbert, and we talk about him every year.
Yeah, you're going to the last year of his deal.
He just hasn't
done it yet.
I'm just kind of not interested in talking about him anymore.
It was a pretty good year last year.
You know? He finished the season on a little touchdown run, but he never really capitalized off the breakout game against the Steelers.
Yeah, I feel like Tolbert's a one game good, and then there's three or four games where he doesn't show up. And I think that's the consistency thing, Dawson, that I'm...
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. I mean, the guy had some touchdowns, but I think he could have done so much more, and he just didn't. And maybe that's because of the quarterback play. You know, maybe it's dealing with Cooper Rush and things like that that doesn't necessarily help your situation. Wolchek, I'm going to try and convince you this team needs a safety.
Okay.
A starting safety. You up for that?
Yeah, you don't have to convince me too hard.
Twist his arm.
What do you think about, though, and the safeties that you've looked at? And I want to run through them if I can because, again, Pro Football Focus has done the superlatives for the safety position.
Okay.
And I want to kind of run through and you pick me the best one that you feel like. And likely, and we talked about it today on the draft show a little bit with, you know, with KJ Winston from Penn State as a kind of a free safety guy. But they got these superlatives for these safeties. And I want to see if you agree with what they say. But do you feel like that's a position that maybe we're not talking about nearly enough? You did resign your two backup guys, but should Hooker and Wilson both be on alert that at 44 you could take a safety here?
I think you could upgrade over both of them. I really do in this draft class at 44. There's four safeties that I think would be instant upgrades right now. So yeah, and then Donovan Wilson, also the cap casualty aspect of it, where you could save some money if you wanted to get off of that deal. So it's actually one of the few that they actually have some depth, it seems like, if they left it status quo. But you can absolutely upgrade that room.
They say the best athlete, Pro Football Focus, is Nick Amanawori. Yeah, from South Carolina.
That's true, from South Carolina. He's a freak athlete, and he tested out of this world.
6'3", 220 pounds.
Yeah.
Do you think he's a first round player? You don't have him in your top 15, do you?
No, I don't. No, I do not. In fact, I ended up putting four safeties ahead of him. He's my fifth safety.
See, that's what's funny, guys. The film does not translate as far as the workout guy, as far as the speed and the athletic ability and stuff like that. Here's a guy that's going to get overdrafted. He is going to get way overdrafted, and he's going to disappoint people in the way he plays because he doesn't play the way he tests.
It's really the tackle. Like, he should be a much more physical player, and you don't see him running the alley and wanting to really use that physicality at times.
Can I interest you in the best tackler that they say that would be Kevin Winston from Penn State?
Yeah, Kevin Winston is a great tackler. I would probably agree with that. I think Makuba is a
Texas
harder tackler.
Yeah.
Makuba's got more pop. Winston probably a more consistent tackler.
Yeah, this is, unfortunately for him, he got hurt like in the second week of the season, so he's coming off a knee injury that caused him to miss. His career, he's only missed 2% of the tackles since he's been at Penn State.
When he led Penn State with 60 tackles, 2.5 for loss.
Yeah, this guy does not. This might be a guy. Do you have him like in the third round?
I got him in the second.
Do you? Okay, you like him a little bit more than me.
I like him a lot. He reminds me a little bit of Earl Thomas in the way that he plays, but he's a bigger player.
Yeah.
He's a center fielder kind of guy.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
He can play. Yeah, he can
play. Bobby sees him a little differently, but I think the coverage was there when I watched him.
Best ball skills, Xavier Watts. I think this is one of the best safeties in the draft.
Agreed.
From Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Okay, he's
led the country with 7 picks.
Yeah, this guy is a ball hawk. You talk about, and now you draft him, you think he goes in the first round for somebody, or is he a second round guy that you might be able to grab at 44?
I think he's an option at 44. I've got him in the second.
Yeah, I think this guy is, you talk about a right place at the right time player, that's what this guy is.
Impact
he
guy.
He is always around the ball, and the ball gravitates towards him. He makes some tremendous plays. He would be an absolute upgrade over your two starters that you had right now. The best guy in the slot. Have you seen Malachi Moore from Alabama?
I have not seen Malachi Moore from Alabama.
Okay,
no. Okay.
They say that you talk about the best cover safety in the slot. Most versatile they talk about is Malachi Starks from Georgia.
Yeah, Malachi Starks is tough to argue.
I think he's going to get overdrafted as well here, too, because the athletic ability I don't think matches how he plays. I think he tests really, really, really poorly.
He did.
Tape's somewhat better than the way that he tests here. You feel like that would be an upgrade for you right there?
I still think it would be. I mean, to me, he's interchangeable, can play either spot. He is reliable. He's a super smart player. Now, originally, we were looking at him like, is he one of the top 10 to 15 players in this draft? No, he's not. But I still think he is a good football player.
I think if you gave me a choice of a safety that I could take at 44, I would take Makuba from Texas. And I know not enough people have talked about him.
Yeah, enough. I would take Watts or Makuba.
Yeah, either one of those guys. Makuba is one of these guys. We look at Brian Branch, what he's able to do, play down, play back, cover in the slot. This guy does all that. So if you're looking for a position, again, we haven't talked about these guys very much at all. I think Makuba from Texas, Watts from Notre Dame are two guys at 44 that you need to consider. Those are outstanding football players that help the middle of your defense a lot.
I mean, if they do that in the second round, then that would probably be showing their hand on going just best player available.
Yeah.
Because the need factor, as much as you, like you said, Walchuk, you could definitely upgrade from your safeties. You don't love what you have.
Yeah.
But these guys elsewhere are
I think these are difference maker safeties.
Yeah. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm totally here for it. If they do that, that would be them just probably going best player available for real.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Dawson.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. We're coming back with a sports hodgepodge.
Yes, don't get got by Tiger Woods on this April Fool's Day, plus your sports headline of the day next year in the nation.